continue. Okay, thanks.
Yeah, I love, and I completely hear what this sort of challenge about young people, and really, and so I guess part of my question comes from when you first started seeing this challenge, and sort of how long ago that was, and if you're seeing things differently now at all, or if you're seeing the challenge sort of having stayed for a significant amount of time.
I'm seeing actually that I think the problem is getting bigger and bigger much faster rather than getting smaller. A few years ago, let me give you a small story. I choose to live abroad for more than a year. I lived in Vietnam for a few months and then in Budapest, Hungary. And especially in Vietnam, I met so many young people who were stuck. Stuck because they had a diploma, but there was no job, or at least not interesting jobs. And what I noticed is that they very well understand that they're stuck, but they don't have the tools to get out of that tunnel. There is no light at the end of the tunnel for them. And I really felt sorry because, let me speak for myself. I've been stuck many times, but at least I know the steps I need to take to get out of there and at least to create and build something, but they don't. They don't know that. So that's when I started to teaching them those skills to create, to take initiative, to set up things themselves and whatever. And what I noticed is that they had huge difficulty in coping with that, because again, the mindset of the whole education system, and it's I've been dealing with students from the US up till, like I said, young people from Vietnam all over the world. So some of them it worked and most of them it didn't work. And what I've been pondering the last year is like, why does it work? And why do they have such difficulty in learning those new skills and picking up those new skills? And what I notice is that the whole culture and mindset of making people fit in is so strong that it is not easy for them just by a couple of interventions to get out of that. It's I compare it with, and it's not an official thing, but it gives the message pretty good. It's like the caged bird syndrome. Have you guys heard about the caged bird syndrome? I see Amanda nodding a little bit, but
it sounds familiar, but I don't know it that well.
The caged bird syndrome is quite simple. Is that if you are a bird in a cage and it's if it's been long in a cage and you open up the door, it won't get out. And even if it gets out, it will pretty soon get back in, because inside of the cage there's some food and water. And
That
is when I realize is that that's the way we have educated and taught young people, is to stay in the cage. And it's a cage which is what I define as a kind by jobs, by consumption, by entertainment. That's kind of a loop, a reinforcing loop. It's a spiral. Yeah? So you have a job, but you don't like the job. So you start consuming more and more stuff, and you start using more extravagant entertainment in order to escape the feeling which you don't like of the job and the work. Yeah. And that makes you, that's what I call the cage, because that creates debt, that creates all kinds of problems, but you need the job, because otherwise you cannot afford to buy your thing out of that. So that's one of the things which I notice, is that the problem is getting bigger rather than smaller, because there are, in the end, I defined six what I call straitjacket strategies, where people are made to perform inside of the cage and not outside of the cage. Another observation is that a lot of young people are in some form or another addicted. And addicted can be quite simple to sugar, but to smoking cigarettes, to but one of the most prevalent addictions is now these days is addiction to social media. And so, and these addictions, yeah, there's, I think in the US, one of the main things now, the addiction to opioids. So what you see is that people will try to escape that situation, but by escaping it, they use, well, substances, but it's not only substances, but it's also behavioral, which makes you worth off. So again, it's a downward spiral. And that's what's happening is I urge you guys to, I don't know if you have a co-working space or a library in your city where you are, and sit next to young people and see and watch how they work. I can tell you it's when you see that, you start to understand the world in a different way. These guys cannot long focus for these people. So and when they need to check their phone or the media or talk to their friends or whatever, so they're so addicted to behavior which lets them get away from their things that there are now more multiple studies where both cognitive and emotional capabilities of young people are decreasing. It's less than a previous generation. So long answer to your question, I think the situation is getting worse.
Arnold, you haven't mentioned violence yet, but I'm sure this is the end result too.
Absolutely. But it's... people act out of frustration, and not knowing what to do. And there's so many young people who finish their, well, let's call it for the moment, the university, because that's what their parents wanted them to do. And many people think their education is useless or they didn't like it, but they just did it because there was the push from their parents. And then in the end, there's nothing. So, that step into violence and whatever, it's really a small step. Something pops up as something two months ago, I spoke with a man in Baghdad in Iraq, and he wanted to help the young people there. And that, Arnold, we are actually raising two types of people in our society with young people. You have any clue what he said?
No.
He said we raise migrants and terrorists.
Oh, yeah.
The migrants is because, you're talking with a country which is devastated by climate change and droughts and everything. That's actually one of the first things that the war started, because there's no water, there's the drought and everything, and people are leaving. So that's the migrant part, and the terrorist part we very well know. And he said there is no future for these people. So a lot of these things which are happening are, if you think about it, they're quite logical. And I think it's time, and that's at least what I try to play as my role, is to create awareness around this, and expose this, because it's kind of a taboo. Yeah? It's a taboo that we've been trying to get people to fit in into a straight jacket and then everything is fine, but actually it makes it worse. Yes. So I think it's time to recognize that things are not working and that we quickly need to change it. Otherwise, we not only create a terrible future for these young people, but also for ourselves. And that's why more and more well-known people are getting worried, because they are starting to see that, well, this creates obviously not only violence, but also income inequality and all of these things. And then many, many well-known people are seeing that they say social unrest because of income inequality is one of their number one fears these days.
Yeah. I noticed that Denise in the chat had put in a question there for you. She talks about the energy from frustration being fear-based. Do you think it's possible to confront the fear factor in a positive way?
Absolutely, and that's why I think, but that's something which I had to learn, which everybody has to learn, is that if you work from love, and if you start to love yourself, if you start to love what you do, or at least be open to those things, like, hey, what do I love to do? What do I like to do? Where am I passionate about? But all of these questions, which any self-help book will tell you that it is, and it's extremely frustrating because most people have no clue. But that's the process which you need to get through, because, like I said, all of these things are suppressed. And it takes time to unpack your capabilities, and then you will get into what you love and what you like. Yeah? Right. At the same time, I do meet young people but also elderly people who are extremely, extremely extremely good ideas and are working on very, very impressive projects. So it is possible. But it requires, that's why I say it's the fitting in is fear-based. The flying out is love-based.
Yeah.
Because you cannot, and I call love the fuel for your flight. Yeah, you cannot fly if there's no love. But the first thing what we are taught everywhere is to dislike yourself, because it says you're not good enough.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, that's the number one message. Yeah, it's like you're not good enough. Yeah, you should. These are your weaknesses. You should change this and this and this and this. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and that's why. Yeah, that's what parents do. Yeah. So the negative self-talk already starts at a very, very young age, and you start to embody it yourself, because you start to believe it yourself that you're not good enough.
Yep.
And that's why I say is love is the only way out, but not an easy way out, because it requires a lot of a lot of effort in order to develop that, because that's not what we learn. Yeah, let me be honest. I was 40 years old when I had my first personal coach. And that's the first man or woman, doesn't matter, who asked me and said, Arnold, what do you want?
Wow.
I was 40 years old. Before that, nobody had ever asked me that question.
Wow.
Yeah, Arnold, you mentioned the parents saying, you know, you're not good enough. But I think the evaluation system and the school system also tells people that they're not good enough, without telling them they're not good enough for what. And I think that's probably even more powerful than parents, especially at the teenage level, where you know, there are other influences coming in than parents.
Yeah, it's everything. It's like, yeah, I'm at the moment writing a book about what I'm discussing with you guys, but it's like it already started in all the parts of society where we had armies and religions and clergy and everything. It's just there were a few guys who were in control, and the rest of the guys, they're continuously being told this is not good and this is your weakness and you should improve this and this was like whatever. So it's so ingrained in our society, in our culture, in our way of thinking. Yeah, I was a manager in an American company for a long time, but I can still recall I was educated to become a first line manager when I was very young, and I had to learn how to give feedback. But the only thing is focus on what's wrong.
Yeah,
and look at the mistakes they make and whatever, and give them feedback about it. There was nothing about, hey, look at what the guy did good. Yeah, or look at, yeah, so it's so ingrained in everything what we do that I think it's no surprise that there is so much negative self-talk, and there's so much that people have the feeling, I'm not good enough, people don't like me, I cannot do these things. Yeah, well, it's because we do it everywhere.
Yeah.
And that means that yeah, it's, well, I think, why are people addicted? And why are people having all these mental health issues? Because practically from the moment you're born, we're telling you that you're not good enough.
Yeah.
And I don't mean the other end, because I know it started in the US, and now I heard that it's also already here in Holland, you know, the entitlement thing. Yeah, if you get lost, we give you a prize and everything like that. Whatever. It's a bit of a counter response, but still, it's like, yeah, focus on your strengths. Yeah, that's why I told you when I was 40 years, I get this, I'm my coach asking this question. I was very good in telling what I don't want. And that's still very much the case. If I ask any young person what you do want, they have no clue. If you ask them what you don't want, they will talk for 3 days.
So what do you want?
What I want, I would like to see that there are more and more people working on new kind of solutions, either for education. There is already a lot of things, but I think we also need to build new solutions for new forms of work, new varieties. Like, yeah, because now it's you're either an employee and you have a job, or you're an entrepreneur. But I think that's too big a gap. Yeah, and everywhere, you know, especially from social security point of view and whatever, yeah, it's not good to be, well, an entrepreneur or a gig economy, whatever. It's way too hard. Yeah, so that those steps are too big and not fair either. Yeah, because, yeah, well, you know, the example of the Uber drivers and all of these things. Yeah, it's like, yeah, you have to take your own insurance. You have to do all of your own. And we all know this is not going to happen. So I think we need to create new models, new things, which can replace that situation. And at the same time, we need to create models where people learn much faster. You have to learn much faster, because it can be a skill or a certain skill set which is needed for the next few years, and then after that can become quickly obsolete because AI is developing so rapidly that it's no longer needed. So you need to learn something new. You need to learn something new. So how can we help people to learn these things very fast?
I'm thinking of, you know, when you talked about the social media being an addiction for these youngsters. It's really because they're limited to their own age group in connecting with each other. And back to the almost medieval civilization. elderlies and people of all ages get together and interact. And I think the complexity answer to some of these problems is to get people to start talking about it to each other, and not just in their own age group, but right across the whole spectrum, demographic spectrum. And out of that will emerge some learning opportunities, as you describe. But we lack that village community any longer, where the whole village meets and interacts, probably with some entertainment as well, etc. But I think the social media is very limited to their own environment, almost like they have a community of practice within that social media. And that's not helping the problem, because their connectivity is not to the entire community.
Yeah, but it's making it worse, because even young people don't, it becomes their only way of communicating.
Yes.
Yeah. So let me give you a small example. A few years ago, I worked with one group of young people in Budapest and another group in Ho Chi Minh City, Vietnam. And all these people, they didn't know each other. So I said, why don't you guys go out, have a coffee together, so you get to know each other? And I thought that it was an extremely simple assignment. And I was like, well, for me, it was a no-brainer, really. It was like, well, why don't you do that? And then the next week I asked, did you guys have the meeting? And they said, no, we didn't have the meeting. And then it took me a couple of weeks, and I was starting to get pissed off, really. I was like, I said, didn't you want that? And they said, no, we like it. But they just had no clue how to organize that. They couldn't do that. And then it changed when I pointed, there were two groups of three, and I said, you are organizing. Yeah, the date and the time and all this thing. You are organizing in that group. And then the week after, they had a meeting, and they all said, Arnold, we never had such an interesting meeting. It was so nice. It was so interesting. We didn't even order food, because we had such similar stories, and it was so interesting. And I was like, huh?
Mm-hmm.
I find I know of a lot of stories like that, but most of the stories I have, the talk is about some sort of activity that's common to them. So I know of an educator, University of Toronto, who sets up medical education systems between Palestinian doctors and Israeli doctors, and they talk about their practice, and that's how they start to learn about each other and interact with each other. So some sort of common project seems to be quite helpful.
Yeah, so like I said, a lot of these things don't need to be rock bottom science. Yeah, it's like returning to being human again, and rather than being a cog in the machine.
Yeah. It's interesting to me too, because there are pockets of people doing this stuff. I've spent a lot of time as an Outward Bound instructor, and so taking gobs of middle school and high school students out into the woods without phones and without technology. And although at first most of them are flipping out because they don't have those things, they end up, you know, figuring it out. So I guess part of my question, which is still formulating a little bit, is about where the nodes are that this level of sort of teaching of these skills, which is almost the new way to learn, right? It is the model that's not the static model, but that is a moving process that you learn, that like the experiential education cycle almost, right? You do something, you reflect on it, and then you apply what you learn through your reflection to do something else, right? Very sort of basic version. And so is there, you know, through our knowledge of complexity, is there something that we can do or say or ask that would then connect these things in a way that at some point creates a tipping point. Does that question make sense?
Yep.
I think the I'm not trying to change 3.5 billion young people. My goal is to focus on 1% of them. But still, you're talking about 350 million. Yeah, so it's still a large group. But what I'm now currently creating is a program where I'm telling them is like, you need to redesign it. It's not I will not tell you what to do. I will not tell you how to create new communities. I will not tell you how to do. Actually, my main project, which I like to do, is to build what I call sustainable for all cities. Yeah? I think we need new cities because through pollution and all of these mega cities all over the world, it is totally not working anymore. And if you add climate change to the mix, we need to move to different places, whatever. And what I tell these guys is like, well, capitalism is not working anymore. A lot of these things in our society are not working anymore. And I'm pretty sure all of the people in power, they're not going to change it, because so you have to create it yourself. Yes. Yeah, so what my goal is that I, well, help build these leaders where they create these things themselves, rather than wait for someone else who's never gonna do that.
Yep.
So I think it's our role to facilitate that and not fall into the trap, because they're easy, like asking and say, oh, how should we do? What should we do? Whatever. Because that's how people at least 25 years of their life are being taught. It's like, no, you create it.
Yeah.
Hi, I think I may be stable enough to jump in. Thank you. This is incredible. I've been taking all these notes and putting more notes in the chat. I have two questions, and they both have to do with why did we discard what I will call some of the most natural engagements, the conversations that we have and the stories that we tell among people we trust. And then as we become braver with telling those stories and having those conversations, then we expand out to people we don't really know that well, but that we feel we can trust. So my first question is, why did we discard that? And I think part of the movement to electronic or technology enhanced communications is that the trust level doesn't have to be the first part of that equation. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think it's an extremely important part of that, because am I talking to a human being or to a screen of pixels? And I'm intentionally giving you that answer because even young people, you all know the example of young people sitting on either end of a couch and they're still chatting with each other. Yeah, they're not talking with each other. So it's... Yeah, I happen to live here again where I grew up as a young man, and I got here young people, well, pretty young, they're around 10, 12, I don't know, 13, 8 years old, whatever. Normally, they would go and talk to the neighbor and introduce themselves and whatever, but now when I walk across them, they look the other side. So it's, and of course I'm a very frightening guy, but it's like, yeah, it's like people are not used for what you call these normal engagement, these natural things, because it's somehow pushed out of the system.
But I also would say that to me depends a little bit on where you are. Like, I grew up outside Philadelphia, but now I live in New York City. And so that sort of walking by without talking to somebody, that sort of grit that you find when you're on the subway sitting next to a million people and yet you don't want to talk to anybody, that is almost this, I don't even know how to fully go into it. But it's almost this sort of survival piece, mm-hmm. where you are now with so many people and in such close contact with them that it's actually almost easier to not. And, you know, some of those really rare and awesome, actually they're not that rare, moments where somebody walks onto the train and is totally lost and has no idea where they're going. And you watch four or five New Yorkers kind of start being like, hey, where are you trying to go? And what are you trying to do? And it becomes this team building moment on the train. And I have seen that so many times. And it is one of my favorite things about New York City. And at the same time, I guess I kind of lost where I was going a little bit, but I appreciate sort of how much that sort of culture and context really shapes how we behave and how we move, and have done a lot of similar work in, so I do a lot of work with visuals and drawing and using visuals to help us do exactly what you're talking about and reconnect on an actual level where we're having real engagement. And we're relearning the skills that both of us have. And so I'm not sure that I have a full question other than to sort of share some of this, and would love to hear your reaction to it and appreciate the sort of variety of responses I get when I ask somebody to pull out a pen and draw something, as opposed to, you know, talk something out even, or...
Yeah, but all of those things are extremely important, and I think what we need as a society, but not only as a society, also as a human being, is I want to connect with other people. That connection with other people is one of the main sources of our happiness. So, and if we want, and like I said, based upon my introduction around the mental health issues, we need to consciously be working on helping people to increase their levels of happiness. Part of that is connecting with other people. But you can only connect with other people if you connect with yourself. Yeah. And then it's the most fun thing there is. It's the most nice thing there is. Yeah. That's what makes life juicy and interesting and challenging and fun and whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. And yet it's a thing that I think, because of what John mentioned earlier and sort of our not having the village anymore, we don't have religion in the same way, a lot of us. We don't have, the community in the same way that, yeah, it definitely, I hear you.
Yeah. Awesome. Still, you can do it, but you need your self-esteem, you need your self-confidence and whatever, yeah? Yeah. I shared that I lived abroad in another city. Yeah? I go to Budapest and whatever. I knew nobody there, literally nobody. I cannot read Hungarian. I cannot speak it. I have no clue. So I had to find everything, yeah, from a place to stay and whatever. And again, I'm not a rich guy, so it's not like I'm going to book a couple of hundred euros hotel and I'm fine. No, I had to figure all these things out myself. So you need to reach out to people and talk with people and talk with strangers and maybe even people who don't speak English, whatever, yeah, and figure these things out. But you can only do that if you respect yourself. If you're not afraid, whatever, yeah. I'm pretty sure if you are a very low level of self-respect, people wouldn't do that, and they would have, well, returned by return plane because they say it's too frightening, yeah?
Yeah.
But for me, it's been, I would say, the most exciting thing what happened in my life.
Yeah. Awesome.
Hmm. You stimulate a lot of questions and a lot of thought. I must admit, I didn't really think, you know, much about this issue until you've really highlighted it. And it's I now believe it is such an important issue. It's probably the major issue as our so-called world progresses, or so-called progresses.
I really like your point and your answer to the question earlier of the problems really getting bigger, and it's not just education.
No.
And I think because we almost have created a world where we don't have that much language for interdisciplinary stuff.
Sure.
Or stuff that is quite that connected to other stuff around it.
Totally agree. That's why I bring in climate change and demographics and healthcare issues and automation. I blend all of these things together because they all have a huge influence on what is happening. So, but again, it's the old model is that you should focus on one area. You should be an expert in one area. That still is needed in certain areas. I'm not going to say that. But what is really needed is people are able to connect the dots and to see how all of these things are influencing each other and understand that.
I'm popping in again, and I thank you. You're absolutely correct. I mean, they really are. When we distill our fundamental understanding of how we survive, and we just look, even if we look at just one complex system, the environment, or healthcare, or education, or the government and society. But we can't separate them because they are interdependent. And at varying points, you're absolutely right, Arnold, that they surface to have a higher degree of visibility for what are the reasons. Some of that is cultural, some of that's social. But at other times, if we pulled them out and fixed them, as soon as we put them back into the system of systems, they would then be influenced by everything else. And so I think it's one of the things that certainly keeps me awake at night.
And that is what I say is also the one of the source of one of the main problems is because we're so taught to think in one area of expertise and only focus on depth and whatever, and then we assume that the whole world will be solved by itself. I let me give you a small example. Years ago, I attended as an observer the UN climate change conference in Copenhagen. Even within climate change, because climate change, even within climate change, there's rainforests and there's air and there's farmers who want to make a living. I was there, and then people said, oh, we've been put everything in various working groups and parties and everything, but I think all these things are connected. We are not solving these things because they are connected.
Right.
And then I was like, well, big deal. Yeah, but for them it was a big deal because the first time they start to understand that you cannot solve water problems or without thinking about a farmer who's want to make a living by growing cattle in the rainforest. Yeah, so that's when these people start to understand, it's like, okay, we put things, we have a problem and we slice it up into very tiny parts and then we hope we can fix it. And already even in the climate change, they're talking for close to 40 years now, I believe, and nothing is solved. It's getting worse by the day. So that's where people are starting to understand these things. And that's why I'm it's one of my other endeavors is I'm trying to bring together, I call these people generalists, is like bringing people together, like, or you guys call yourself complexity problem solvers or whatever. For me, it's all the same. It's like people who see the big picture and can connect the dots. Mm. And I think that is by far what we need as a society now. And that's why I'm urging you guys to take the lead rather than wait, because it's not going to happen. Other people are not going to take the initiative. They're not going to do these things. And I'm urging folks like yourself in your own communities, like, well, start creating and building it, because that's what's needed.
I do want to give a shout out. Arnold and I actually met through ULAB.
Oh, cool.
And in the very first cohort, and we were not in the same circle, but we were in the same cohort of, you know, 18,000 people. And I found him and was totally, as Amanda was also, totally inspired by the conversations and work and writings and postings and chat that he was sharing. And I absolutely agree that these greater conversations are critical. And one, again, another thing that I think is important, and John, thank you so much for being with us, because you have been, you know, sort of a consistent voice in our pop-ups, of which when we share these broadly afterward, and this recording is going to be out there for people to respond to. But I'd like to think that there is a way that there is one, and when I say one thing, but a few, but a limited number of things that we could, as a community or community of communities, so the work that you're doing, Arnold, the work that John's doing, Amanda's doing, Plexus is doing, I'm doing independently, could find something that we would all be able to start to engage around. And if it is, you know, a model, or if it is simply saying we're going to have these open types of conversations within people from different communities who are going to then go back to their communities and share. But I find, Arnold, and that's where I'd like to have that be sort of a concluding question, where do we really start? How can people who care and have the fortitude, and I use that word not lightly, but the fortitude and belief in having these conversations and taking action, spending the time to do so, where do we start?
Start with the young people in your community. Reach out to them and talk with them and work with them. They're extremely happy if you say, hey, we want to work with you and prepare you and help you prepare for a world which most of the people of my age screwed up. They're really, 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 they really appreciate it. As a matter of fact, what I noticed is that they're looking forward to that because their parents are not doing it. They see that their teachers are not doing it. They see that the business are not doing it. So if you or we, or as a community, and we reach out to them and say, hey, we're there, and how can we assist you and help you and do all these things together? They love that.
I love it.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And that this may be an opportunity for us to do those inquiry-based conversations and just send them out there. Maybe have a very short list of conversations, questions to reach out to schools, to you know, community groups. We have something, Arnold, that's called Adaptive Positive Deviance. And what it does is engages everybody in conversations. And it's actually pretty easy to implement. It's very generative. There's no one right way to do it, but it does lead people into having conversations. And the most important thing is to look for something we call the unusual suspect. So it's a person who's doing something or thinking about something in a way that isn't necessarily what everybody else is thinking and doing. And it can often lead to you know, a lot of energy. It can lead to new solutions, and I'll definitely share some of that work with you. But that may be something that we could do, and ask several you know, communities and groups to develop a set of questions to use broadly in all different kinds of environments and venues, and see what happens. And if we share back, I think it could be a really generative learning experience for everybody. So I'm going to just mute myself and let everyone sort of respond to that, and then we can end. But Arnold, thank you so much. This is unbelievably wonderful, and I appreciate your extra time with our little bit of a shaky start, but this is incredible.
Awesome. I feel like Denise did such a good job wrapping us up. In many ways, I would just, you know, echo some of Denise's thanks for jumping on, for sharing sort of your perspective, particularly from a global point of view. I've spent a lot of time in the U.S. seeing similar things. And I, you know, if I'm just to share one thing that I'm taking away, and I will share the notes that I took with you all as well. It's really thinking about seeing people and seeing who the generalists are and those who are seeing the big picture, and feel like I fit, once I'm maybe straddling the line of being a generalist and some other things, which I don't have enough feet for. So maybe that does make me a generalist. And I really appreciate that point of view and sort of having that language. So thank you.
Well, Denise, thank you very much. And Arnold, it's been a great hour, I think, for me. I think the answer to your question, Denise, is that we can connect with more people with different views and different lifestyles. I think that out of that diversity will come some emergent learning and some ideas that will lead us forward. Sometimes when we talk, and maybe this group is that comes to the pop-ups too, all have sort of similar practices, and we need to bring in some farmers, some miners, some teenagers, and start to interact with them.
Yeah, and I'm going to add to that real fast, John, as well. So one thing that was sort of percolating in the back of my brain was I'm actually hosting a meeting tonight with some folks who are interested in thinking about that gap between college and employment and those skills, and looking to start a nonprofit in that space. Internships at the moment, but realizing that internships aren't it, and that it's so much also about the skills of being able to know how to create a space so that you can build your own career, so that by the time you get out, you aren't just $1 million in debt, I'm exaggerating, but only slightly, and, you know, stuck because you don't actually, like, that gap that you talked about is so real. And so part of what's percolating in the back of my head is is there a way to sort of bridge sort of what you're talking about? And would you all have interest in joining that conversation as well? So I'm gonna put that out there too.
Well, I am interested, the approach I'm taking is not to be patronizing towards these people. It's just that they know what they need, they know what they want, and they really appreciate if you can help them, whatever. But I'm saying is like, I'm teaching you or helping you so you can do it yourself.
Yeah.
And if you have that mindset, then it will work.
Yep. Cool. Awesome. Well, do you have any other last thoughts for us before we close, Arnold?
No, just create some project, do things. Yeah. You're apparently a very clever group of people, and we're very engaged and want to do something good, but start doing something. Mm-hmm. Because that's what the world needs.
Yeah.
I entirely agree. I think, and in particular coming from a sort of academic community, there's not enough strategy for moving forward, for transition. We just like to talk about things.
Yeah, but that's everywhere, and then we start blaming the government, or
you guys
are blaming Mr. Trump or whatever. But it's everywhere the same, and then they say, yeah, education doesn't change, and they don't know whatever. But it's like, hey, we are all global citizens, and if we see the problem, I think it's your duty to at least come up with a solution.
There you go. Yeah.
Brilliant.
Thank you, Anna. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much again for taking the time, for hanging in there with our ridiculous tech fun issues at the beginning. It was an awesome conversation, and I'm excited about all the other folks who are totally going to jump in and watch this after the fact. And maybe we can also throw up some of the notes that I took with those. I will share that. You know, hopefully we at one point were saying I'm not good enough, but we're moving to a place where we can start to fly out. Where's my flying person?
So Amanda, fly out a little bit. Amanda, you'll have to start your own comic books where we can see all of these things together, you know?
Definitely. Awesome. All right, cool. So thank you again. And I'm going to say, Denise, go ahead and stop us recording and take us away to whatever's next. Happy Tuesday, y'all. enjoy the rest of your
week. Thank you.
And stay in touch. I'm excited to see where this goes or what's going on from here.
Thanks a lot. Bye for now.
Ciao.